You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, March 20th, 2018.
So you really can't go anywhere within the construction zone and even outside of the main line where there isn't construction activity going on. And that's just because we're racing to get to that August deadline.
The Indiana Department of Transportation is speeding up construction on Interstate 69 through Bloomington. We'll hear from NDOT spokesman Andy Dietrich about I-69 Section 5's closures, construction, and the department's blitz to finish the project before its August deadline. That's coming up later in the program on today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, local historian Cheryl Munson talks about the warfare and settlement of Monroe County in this part two of the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana. But first, your daily headlines.
FoodWorks, a Bloomington business venture to employ victims of abuse, has shut down. The Middleway House food preparation business was founded in 2002 with the mission to train and provide job experience to the women housed in the domestic violence shelter. Middleway House Outreach Communications Coordinator Sarah Hunt stated the FoodWorks site is available as a commercial rental space in a press release yesterday. Hunt says while FoodWorks served as a vocational training and jobs incubator for many of Middleway House's clientele, the cost of sustaining the program drained the shelter's funds.
And of course, we also didn't want it just to be a job. We wanted to pay people a living wage and offer benefits to kind of allow people to reenter the community and the workforce. However, even though it was a program, it just became financially burdensome and started to affect our other programs, which of course are vital as well.
Hunt says, in an attempt to make FoodWorks financially solvent, Middleway House briefly worked with local grocer Blooming Foods. That agreement ended in the fall of 2016.
They ended that partnership, and we found ourselves with this empty space, which was a significant financial burden. Then we met with many other not-for-profits and local businesses in an effort to find a new way to use the space. However, nothing that was going to last long term or that was viable. And we just reached the difficult decision that financially we needed to find a way to repurpose that space and decided to offer it for lease.
Hunt says Middleway House has sold FoodWorks kitchen equipment and the commercial space on 318 South Washington Street is now up for rent. It's Middleway House's hope that the rent from the space will help pay for its other programming. Hunt says shutting down FoodWorks was a difficult decision for the Middleway House's board of directors and administration.
FoodWorks was created with the hard work, creativity, and financial investment of lots of people and organizations. And we also share the disappointment that the community feels at the end of this chapter in our history. But after examining and exhausting many possibilities, there just weren't any viable ways to go forward.
Middleway House Executive Director Deborah Morrow was formerly a client of the shelter and was employed through FoodWorks.
The Monroe County Domestic Violence Coalition is inviting the public to join its annual spring conference on Thursday. The coalition is made up of organizations throughout the county, including Middleway House, District 10 Pro Bono Project, Connect to Help, the Bloomington Police Department, the Monroe County Sheriff's Department, and the Monroe County Prosecutor's Office. Michael Shermis, with the City of Bloomington's Community and Family Resources Department, says the Spring Conference is a great way for people to learn about local domestic violence issues.
People should come and get involved and hear about it and understand the depth of the problem. It's kind of one of those problems that people don't pay as much attention about in the community. And so this is trying to shed a light on it and show how people are trying to deal with it and that it is a serious issue here, even though, you know, a lot of people don't think that about, you know, nice old Bloomington, but it's still a problem out there, and we want to make sure that people know that and that we're addressing it best we can and that we're all working together on it.
Shermis says the Monroe County Domestic Violence Coalition begins their meetings by outlining the process many victims of domestic violence go through in the area.
We try to help provide the bigger picture. And so, for example, the opening plenary is called a survivor's journey. And it is the opportunity for people to see what it means for somebody to have to go through the system. And our booklet that we put out, the statistics booklet, talks about how in the Monroe County legal system people go through it. So it talks about the investigating agencies and how the prosecutor's office deals with the thing and what kind of community supervision goes on. And when you talk about incarceration, what does that mean and where do people go through it and how do they get through it? So there's a big chart explaining that. And it helps for survivors to understand, but it also helps for all the other people because it's never so easy. It took a long time for us to even figure out the chart ourselves because it doesn't go one way for everybody, and there's different ways. So it's really good for all of the people who are involved in the pieces to see the bigger picture and how it all gets put together.
The Monroe County Domestic Violence Coalition's Spring Conference begins this Thursday at St. Mark's United Methodist Church. Registration is from 8 to 9 a.m., and the conference runs from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
The Bloomington Plan Commission approved the city's 2018 comprehensive plan in special session yesterday. It's taken the city 15 years to update this growth master plan for Bloomington. Updates to the city's previous plan, known as the 2002 Growth Policies Plan, began in 2011. Planning Services Manager Scott Robinson says best practice is to update the comprehensive plan every 5 to 10 years. Plan Commission President John Hoffman commented, quote, "With the pace of change in society, it behooves us to do things more frequently," unquote.
Internally, I have suggested, just as a suggestion, that we embark, once we're through the process of both this and the UDO, the new UDO, that we put in place a schedule of regular updates that will not necessarily follow the same super elaborate process of, you know, charrettes and so forth and so on, but would make it a more routine part of what we do to say every couple of years or every 3 years there will be an opportunity for anyone who thinks that something needs to be tweaked to put that in play. And if you make it more routine, then it becomes less cataclysmic every time it happens.
Robinson says it's the planning staff's intention not to let the next comprehensive plan revision take as long.
You know, it certainly doesn't have to be a staff-driven process, but I think we're on the same page and recognize that we don't want to be in this situation 15 years later doing a very large, heavy lift again. So,
the newly adopted comprehensive plan will now be used by consultants Clarion and Associates to update the city's unified developmental ordinance.
The City of Bloomington is making plans to rehabilitate RCA Park, situated between South Rogers Road and Country Club Drive. The $200,000 project will include re-roofing a picnic shelter and reconstructing parts of the park's popular north-south hiking trail. The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission reviewed the project plans in their meeting yesterday. Parks Operations Director Dave Williams told the Redevelopment Commission the trails have suffered from erosion since they were originally built in 1994.
We were here first before all the upstream developments, Summit School, all the other developments along off of Weimer and Adams Street have occurred. And the result of downstream drainage has washed a lot of this trail out. We need to reconstruct it. We need to put in new drainage conveyances, boardwalks, asphalt, things of that nature.
Trail reconstruction is projected to begin next month and continue into 2019. Williams also told the commission plans for the new Switchyard Park are now fully formed. The park will be constructed at the former McDowell Railroad switchyard between Walnut and Rogers Streets. Williams says amenities being planned for the park include a pavilion with concert lawns, a dog park, and numerous activity areas. 600 trees will be planted to support both the ecology and aesthetics of the park. According to Williams, the new facility will include several cutting-edge design features to meet criteria for the green efficiency certification required by city ordinance.
We're going to have electric vehicles charging stations outside the park. We are recovering all the roof water from this facility. It has a green roof. We're going to be pumping the water over to use on the orchard or on the community garden site. So there's a lot of cutting-edge design features.
Williams says the park will include security cameras as well as a Bloomington Police Department substation at one end. He adds, though, that frequent activity contributes to the park's security.
It will also have Wi-Fi. So if you're a student that wants to do work in the park, again, we have a table and chair. You meet with your study group in the bosque. We get an extra hour of your time. That is the way we make parks secure and safe, is to bring you there constantly. Bryant Park, you always see people. You always see activity. That's the model we want to achieve here, is to bring you here, get you to stay here, make it a part of your daily life.
Williams told the Redevelopment Commission that Switchyard Park construction will begin in mid-May, with substantial completion by the end of the year.
Bloomington Utilities Director Vic Kelson reports that solar panels installed at the CBU Service Center has lowered the department's own utility bill by more than 50%. Kelson gave the news to the Utilities Service Board in its March 19th meeting.
The solar panels here at the service center have been in use now for a little over a month, for probably 2 months now. But between February of 17 and February of 18, we experienced a 57% net reduction in electrical use in this building. So, and that turned into 56% in dollars. So far, so good.
The city of Bloomington began a major push to increase solar use at city facilities in July of 2017. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
The Indiana Department of Transportation is beginning a race to the finish to complete Interstate 69 on time. NDOT and I-69 Section 5 spokesman Andy Dietrich says construction along the Highway 37 corridor to Martinsville is at an all-time high. Construction crews are working on the 2nd and 3rd Street bridges on Bloomington's west side. Both northbound and southbound lanes on 37 are limited to one lane, and the Northern Business 37 from Walnut Street is closed to finalize that interchange with I-69. Dietrich says heavy construction along 37 is expected to last throughout the summer.
Mr. Dietrich, can you tell me a little bit about what's going on with I-69 construction around Bloomington?
Well, I think the easier question would be what's not being constructed right now. Obviously, we have a pretty tight time frame if we're going to hit August of this year to be to substantial completion. And we knew that going in when the state picked up the project last August, that doing a lot of work in 1 year's time was a very aggressive schedule. And we hope that our customers and motorists around understand that there's a lot of work to be done. There will be some points where things will start opening up before we get to the conclusion. but they just need to hang with us and be as patient as possible while we get through, you know, the majority of the construction as we approach August. I think the biggest change for most, and I think most people anticipated it, was the traffic shift that we made in early March in the northern part of the construction zone from about Bryant's Creek up to the Liberty Church interchange, where we took all the northbound traffic and moved it over to the new southbound lanes, kept everyone in a single lane configuration with a middle turn lane. And that seems to be working out pretty well. It allows the crews to get in and really get to work on the northbound lanes and reconstruct shoulders and do the patching and eventually get into the paving they need to do so we can get those northbound lanes open before we get to that August time frame. If we get down to the southern end of the construction zone, I think the key phrase there is bridge work and trying to get east-west mobility back to where it needs to be. We've heard from a lot of drivers and motorists about the delays and the congestion at both 2nd and 3rd Street. A lot of that's going to be alleviated, hopefully around Memorial Day, around that time. The bridge work that's being done is in a couple of different phases where we'll start and do the work on the north side and then shift traffic over to the same configuration on the south side and then do some median work. So people will see traffic patterns shifting on each of those bridges, but it is to accommodate different things. And when traffic is shifted one way and that one lane is open, I think it's the right lane eastbound right now, we've had a couple of questions from folks saying, you know, what's going on? I don't see any work happening in that lane. Well, the reality is the work is happening down below, and it's the completion of the retaining walls and a lot of utility work that goes along there, and we need to keep that lane clear as a protection for the workers who are down at ground level below the bridge doing the work. So the 2nd and 3rd Street bridges will continue in various configurations until about Memorial Day, and then things should lighten up there. There are going to be restrictions on the main line, State Road 37, off and on throughout the summer, depending on where the work is going on. Obviously, at Sample Road, where we're putting in the overchange or the overpass there, that work needs to be, the workers need to be separated from traffic. So we're always going to be taking some lanes there. The Walnut Street interchange is something that needs to be brought up to interstate standards. It's not a lot of work, actually. It's about a month's work. So, you know, mid to late April, we should have that open again. That's really just widening some shoulders, doing some drainage work and repaving to make sure that that ties in well with the interstate that's going to be there. The Liberty Church interchange up on the northern end, work continues there, and along with the access roads from that interchange to those customers who are on either side of State Road 37, as we continue to close off access, because this is a limited access highway, at places like Turkey Tracks to the east and Pine Boulevard to the east. Eventually, once those access roads are open on the west side, we'll begin making those closures on the west side as well. And those will be, we'll give folks plenty of notice when those things are going to happen. So you really can't go anywhere within the construction zone and even outside of the main line where there isn't construction activity going on. And that's just because we're racing to get to that August deadline.
Mr. Dietrich, anything else that you think motorists or listeners should know about I-69 construction? It sounds like you all are on a construction blitz between now and August.
We are indeed on a construction blitz between now and August, and it is our intention, even though it is a very aggressive schedule, to meet that schedule and get, you know, most of the traffic lanes open and moving freely by that time. The one thing I would suggest to motorists is we have, you know, alternative routes, especially if you're heading to Indianapolis. I would strongly encourage people to take State Road 46 over to either 135 or I-65 and head north that way. or State Road 46 over west to State Road 67 and head north that way. We know that it's going to be congested in the northern part. Anytime you take that much traffic, especially during evening rush hour and especially on Friday evenings, motorists can anticipate backups and slower moving traffic. Those other alternatives only add, 25 to 30 minutes to the trip, but you're moving and you're not going to run into congestion. That's the way I go on Friday nights when I'm heading north. And it's worked out very well for me. So we would encourage folks to get off of 37 whenever possible, not necessarily to the county roads, because those can offer their own challenges. But if you're heading to Indianapolis, I-65 or State Road 67 are good alternatives.
Andy Dietrich with I-69 Section 5 and Indiana Department of Transportation, thank you so much for speaking with us. I appreciate you taking the time.
It's my pleasure. Call anytime.
That was Indiana Department of Transportation and I-69 spokesman Andy Dietrich speaking about ongoing construction throughout Bloomington.
Coming up next, it's the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana.
Monroe County's Bicentennial Committee presents the Bicentennial Journal, stories celebrating the rich history of Monroe County.
This is my Monroe County story. I'm Cheryl Munson.
And the story continues from last week.
Beginning with the arrival of Europeans in our country, the area that is now Monroe County evolved through a series of military battles, treaties, and government land purchases designed to remove native peoples. In 1717, French traders were the first settled Europeans in Indiana, and they lived peacefully with the Indians. Their nearest settlements to our area were at Vincennes and Weotnon, where they built forts. Native groups traded furs with the French for metal tools, guns, cloth, and ornaments. Then British settlers to the east moved west, desired land controlled by the French, and the French and Indian War was the result. By 1754, the British had defeated the French and won all lands east of the Mississippi River. In 1783, after American colonists had defeated the British, our area became part of the vast Northwest Territory. The western expansion of American settlers led to military campaigns to push out native groups. In 1800, our area was included in the Indiana Territory, which had its first capital at Vincennes. After negotiation of various treaties between the U.S. government and Indian tribes, the southern part of the state of Indiana was admitted to the Union in 1816. At that time, southern Monroe County was initially part of Orange County. Our northern border here in Monroe County was the state's 10 o'clock treaty line stretching from near Gosport to Story. Later, after Monroe was separated from Orange County and was designated its own county in 1818, our county grew with additional treaties and agreements, changing in size and shape as shown on various maps. Monroe County took its final form in 1831 when Brown County was created. What was Monroe County like in the early 1800s? We have records of the first surveyors in 1812 and the added treaty areas in 1819. The records show the types of witness trees near land section corners. Beech, maple, oak, and hickory were the dominant tree species. The forest was dark, broken only by the river valleys, as described by the early travelers. In 1816, after David Thomas arrived at the White River, he wrote in his diary, quote, "We felt much satisfaction in effecting our escape from the dark shades of a thick forest." In closing, I hope you will close your eyes for a moment and picture yourself walking to Monroe County like the pioneers did, traveling the Buffalo Trace from the Ohio River at Louisville and heading overland from French Lick or Vincennes. You are marching through deep shade beneath a soaring green canopy between widely spaced trees that are 3 to 4 feet in diameter. No brush to impede your route, just majestic trees and a leafy carpet for as far as your eyes can see. When the American settlers initially arrived in Monroe County, the first thing they did on the property they bought was to cut and burn most of the trees to create fields and pastures. Cleared land was improved land and had a much higher tax value, as it still does today. So there are now only a very few stands of uncut forest in Indiana or the Midwest. Lucky for us, there is a nearby example at Pioneer Mothers Memorial Forest near Paoli. If you don't already know this magical place, I hope you will visit the trails through this virgin timber stand anytime from May through September to have a traveling experience similar to that of our early settlers.
Join us next week for another edition of the Monroe County Bicentennial Journal. Bicentennial Journal is produced by Kate Welch with help from Joyce Poling. Our engineer is executive producer, and executive producer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, I'm Erin Wagermiller.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
Support for the Bicentennial Journal and WFHB comes from Monroe County and Visit Bloomington. More information about Monroe County's Bicentennial is available at monroecounty200.us.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Counterspin, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting's weekly radio show, providing a critical examination of national headlines. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.